Chapter 13. Temptation. Several days had passed since Tess's journey to Emminster, and she was back in the fields. The icy winter wind still blew. Tess was cutting swedes from the ground and throwing them into a cutting machine. The work went on for hour after hour. In the middle of the afternoon, a man in parson's clothes appeared at the gate. It was Alec d'Urberville.
"I want to speak to you, Tess," he said, looking around.
She did not answer.
"Tess, I have been thinking about you and me. What happened to you is the worst thing I have ever done. How young and blind you were, and how you must blame me. But listen. I have lost my mother since you were at Trantridge. I want to sell the house and go to Africa to teach people about God. Will you marry me and come as my wife?"
"Oh no, sir, no," she said, quickly stepping back. "I don't love you, and because I am already married. But it is a secret here, so please don't keep asking me questions."
"Married? But who is your husband?" he asked angrily.
"I will not tell,"
she said, and looked up at him.
"Tess, I cannot look at you. There never were such eyes. I admit that seeing you again has tempted me."
"Married? Really?
Well, then I would like to do some good to you and your husband. Is he on this farm?"
"No, he is far away."
"Far away? From you? What sort of husband is he?"
"Oh, do not speak against him," she cried. "It was because of you. He found out."
"Ah, that's sad, Tess. But to stay away from you, to leave you to work like this."
"He does not leave me to work," she cried. "He doesn't know that I am here."
They were interrupted by the sound of a horse, and Tess was relieved to see Farmer Groby riding towards them.
"What are you doing away from your work at this time of day?"
he shouted at Tess.
"Go! Go now!" she said to Alec.
"What? And leave you with him?" said Alec. "I can see from his face what kind of man he is."
"He won't hurt me. He's not in love with me."
Alec nodded.
"Well, then I must go. Goodbye, Tess."
February came, and the weather grew warmer. One weekend morning, there was no one else in the cottage. Everyone had gone to the Candlemas fair to find work for the next season. Tess had not gone, because she was quietly hoping things would change for her before then. She was just finishing her dinner when someone knocked at the door. She opened it, and Alec d'Urberville hurried in. She noticed that he was no longer wearing his parson's clothes. He immediately threw himself down at her feet.
"Tess, I had to come here," he began. "Since I saw you that Sunday, I haven't stopped thinking about you. Please, pray for me, Tess. I am losing my beliefs because of you. It is hard that a good woman should hurt a bad man. When I saw that farmer speaking to you like that, it made me mad. Why can't I protect you while he who is allowed is far away?"
"Do not speak against my husband," she cried. "Give him respect. He has not wronged you."
"I will respect him," he said. "I plan to give a sermon at the Candlemas fair, but I have come here instead."
"Leave me now," she cried. "I must protect my husband's good name. You are behaving terribly."
But Alec d'Urberville continued visiting Flintcomb Ash to try to talk to Tess, or just watch her at work. March came, and the threshing season began. This was the hardest work of all, and Farmer Groby gave Tess the worst job. She had to stand alone all day on top of the shaking threshing machine and feed it with the corn. By the end of one long day, her face was red and covered in bits of corn and dirt. She knew that Alec was watching, and when she finally climbed down from the machine, aching and tired, he was immediately at her side.
"Why do you keep coming here when I've asked you not to?" she moaned, but she was too tired to speak more.
"You're as weak as a baby, Tess," he said. "I don't like to see you treated like this, and I told that to the farmer. Please, let me help you and your family."
"Don't talk about my family," she said. "I will take nothing from you."
That night, she wrote a long letter to Angel and sent it. She told him of her situation and the terrible temptation to accept help from someone else. She said that she was frightened to say who it was and did not want to write about it. She knew that she deserved the way Angel was treating her, and he was right to be angry with her.
"But Angel," she wrote, "please come to me. The day has nothing to show me, as you are not here. I don't like to see birds in the fields, because you are not here to see them with me. I only want one thing in this world, to meet you, my own love. Come to me and save me from this temptation."
It was late March now, and Tess's time at Flintcomb Ash was nearly at an end. One evening, she was sitting downstairs in the cottage with the rest of the family when someone knocked at the door and asked for her. Tess saw a tall, thin girl enter.
"What is it, Liza Lou?" asked Tess, surprised. "I have been walking all day trying to find you, Tess," her sister said, crying. "And I'm very tired. Father's heart has failed. He has died, Tess, and we have been asked to leave the house because he has died. We do not know what to do."
Early one morning, 2 weeks later, Joan Derbyfield, Tess, Liza Lou, and their younger brothers and sisters sat on a wagon and left Marlott and the cottage where they had been tenants for so many years. Some villagers had come to say goodbye the night before. Others were waving to them now. Though it was windy, it did not rain, and their furniture stayed dry. It was a very long journey, and the horses became tired. When they came to a place called Greenhill, the wagon driver stopped to let them rest. Under the hill, and just ahead of them, was Kingsbear, where Joan Derbyfield had rented some lodgings for them. Suddenly, a man came up the hill towards them.
"Are you Mrs. Derbyfield?" he said to Tess's mother.
She nodded.
"I am the widow of John Derbyville, and I am returning to the land of his ancestors."
"Oh, well, I know nothing about that," replied the man, confused. "But I have been sent to tell you that the rooms you wanted have been taken by other tenants. We only got your letter this morning when it was too late, but I'm sure you can find other lodgings somewhere."
The family drove on into the town and tried to find other lodgings, but there was nothing. It was late now and night was falling. The wagon driver said that the furniture must be taken off as the horses were tired and he needed to return part of the way that night. They took the furniture off the wagon and put it next to the church wall. Tess stared unhappily at the tables and sofa, the plates and cups in boxes, and suddenly she felt angry with Angel. She decided to write him a second note,
this time to moan about how badly he had treated her and that she could never forgive him. Tess's mother returned from looking around the church and churchyard.
"We must stay inside the family vault until we can find lodgings. Now, Tess, Liza Lou and Abraham, you can help me. We'll make a place for these little children and then have another look around the town."
In a quarter of an hour, they had pulled the bed next to the door of the vault, which was under the church. Behind this door lay the bodies of Tess's ancestors. Joan put the younger children on the bed and pulled a curtain over them.
"We may all have to sleep in the vault for one night," she said. "But let's try to find something for them to eat." "Oh, what's the use of you marrying a gentleman if it leaves us like this?"
Joan, Tess, Liza Lou and Abraham went back up the little lane that led to the town. At that moment, they heard the sound of a horse, and then a voice said, "Ah, I've been looking for you." It was Alec d'Urberville.